This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet Fuel.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast for the UK business development community, brought to you in association with The Advertist, business development tools and insight for creative marketing and communications agencies. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. On our website, we've got two very important quotes if you work in new business. One of them is from the ad supremo, Nigel Bogle, which goes, "I'm only ever three phone calls away from disaster." Now, this is one of the most important new business maxims to remember because you literally have no idea when something unexpected happens. And as you know, problems always come in threes. In the words of Frank Sinatra, it's "you're riding high in April, shot down in May." And in the words of Spencer Johnson, "who moved my cheese?" New business planning is all about making sure you have a plan B and a plan C. It's no different than making sure you have extra food in the pantry or a spare pair of socks. You need to give your agency options in case what you expect to happen doesn't happen. This means already warming up new business prospects and looking beyond the next 2 months. Now, I know that's tough, but that's what The Advertist helps you with. Every day, The Advertist is packed full of news, insight, facts, figures, people moves, tenders, lists and mergers and acquisitions, crowdfunding and venture capital updates to give you options so you're not scrambling to generate new business from scratch when something catastrophic happens. The Advertist gets you to the door. All you have to do is push through it. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com. That's THEADV. ERTIST.com for a free trial or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, before we cross over to this week's interview, let's poke our head around Jeremy Davis's door where he's getting in a stew over Apple.
There was much excitement this week in Britain. No, really. When it emerged on Twitter that advertising gurus in the UK had declared that anyone with 30,000 or more followers on social media could be classed a celebrity. It was actually a rehash of an old ASA ruling from last summer, but I guess we're all just nostalgic for those simpler, more innocent times. Old news is good news. The cult of celebrity, love it or hate it, is an inescapable phenomenon. In marketing and new business circles, the cult of the celebrity brand is every bit as real. I've lost count of the number of new business presentations I've sat through focusing on how, let's say, a family-owned chain of fishmongers should be more like Apple. Despite the fact that you can't make calls on a fish, you can't listen to music on a fish, and you can't surf the internet on a fish. The fishmonger might also point out, justifiably, that his fish are not created by celebrity designers. Stephen Fry has never posted a tweet eulogising about the joy of his fish, and the only microchips that go with his fish are those from McCain. If I had my way, nobody doing new business would ever be allowed to mention Apple again. It's become as much of a cliche to talk about them as it was to talk about Innocent a few years back, or indeed Orange a few years before that. The serious point is that most brands aren't Apple, and they find it quite hard to relate to Apple. You have a much better chance of keeping the fishmonger engaged in the conversation if you talk about other successful fishmonger brands, or at least related businesses like butchers, bakers, or candlestick makers. This isn't as outdated a reference as it sounds, particularly when it comes to premiumization strategies or added value products. Have you seen how much people pay for scented candles? What I'm saying is, do your homework properly. Tell your prospects something they don't already know. Make it relatable. But beware the temptation to say, be more like Apple, or indeed to be too much like anyone else. We are in the business of differentiation, after all, and nobody wants a candle that smells like fish.
If you get to stage three of the process and you go, do you know what? We've had two conversations. I've then sat down with the team and briefed them, and they've said, Ben, what the hell are you doing? This is not a this is not something that's going to fly. This is not something we can work on. Their objectives are pie in the sky. We could never do that. That additional step says, okay, well, I have a reason to go back to the client and say, no, I've had a conversation with the team. We don't think we can make this work. We're going to now decline the opportunity, which you can't do that if you're jumping from one phone call straight into writing a proposal.
And that right there sums up the difference between business development and sales. In new business terms, there's nothing more frustrating than spending a load of time on a prospect only to find they aren't going to buy, or the anticipated mountain of a job turns out to be a bump in the road. In retail, we're all used to saying, I'm just looking, to shop assistants when they ask if they can help. But in the business world, things aren't quite that simple, and you need ways to sort out the buyers from the tire kickers. My guest this week has just the answer. Ben Potter has already been on the show when we first launched, but between you and me, I think he was just doing me a favour. But anyway, this time he's back with a solid reason, which is how to qualify new business to avoid wasting yours and their time. So if you want to learn a few simple tricks that will smooth out your new business process, listen up and let's get cracking with the Fuel Podcast. Now, one of my first interviews when we launched this show was Ben Potter. Ben is a new business consultant who generally likes to be parachuted into businesses to advise on the bigger customer acquisition picture. Now, when we spoke to him all those shows ago, we were just at the very tip of the spear with regards to the pandemic. We'd just gone through our first couple of weeks of lockdown, and we're all marveling at the novelty of it. So I think it's going to be interesting to catch up with him 6 months later to see if any of his original ideas and theories have changed. And Ben's got a very interesting offer for agency new business people. So welcome back, Ben. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. Thank you very much, Keith. Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, that's all right. Well, in our first show, which was episode 3, I was listening to it the other day, and I humorously introduced it as episode 3 of Business People Trapped in Their Homes. I didn't know I'd be doing episode 30 of the same thing.
Here we are. So I noticed
on Zoom here, you've got your hair cut. Did you do that yourself, or is it you?
There was a point during the summer months when my wife did have a bit of a hack around the ears, I have to say. But since then, I have actually been able to go out and get a proper haircut on a couple of occasions, actually. So thank you for noticing.
I'm so jealous. Now, you kicked off the show back then, and it's very interesting listening back to what we said sort of at the very start of this. You kicked it off by saying that business development was a permanent challenge for agencies, and that at that point it was going to become a real priority to them. Mm. I mean, have your views changed at all since then?
I'd probably say no, to be quite honest. I think business development for a lot of agencies, it clearly remains a challenge. I think this year has probably highlighted the difference between those agencies that perhaps find it a bit easier with established processes and policies and frameworks in place, and those that coming into the pandemic were probably 5 steps behind the start line without a lot of that stuff in place. Inevitably, and certainly in the conversations I've had, this has been the case. Those agencies that are 5 steps behind the behind that start line inevitably have probably found things that little bit more difficult this year, without a doubt.
Right. Right. And I mean, the thing about it is, I guess, that business development isn't just about sales. It's not just about doing more of the same thing or doing it harder. I mean, the business development process is a lot more complex than that. I mean, just to set the scene, I mean, what's your view on the difference between business development and sales?
I think those are terms that are often used interchangeably, aren't they? But I think there probably is a subtle difference. And from my point of view, I often refer to business development as the entire, if you like, life cycle. But I think if you were to go back to the actual definition, I think most people would describe business development as everything happens with respect to actually creating opportunity.
Right.
So it's the generation element of it, if you like. Sales, I suppose, in the traditional sense, is something that you then do once the opportunity has been created. It's perhaps the act of persuasion, if you like, once that opportunity is on the table. But I think sales has become a little bit of a dirty word. I think anything around manipulation, persuasion, anything like that, I think most people would agree isn't how you go about building a relationship with somebody. It's not how you go about encouraging somebody to want to work with you. So I think in many ways, sales has become a little bit of a dirty word. And I think this is actually evident. So I've kind of seen a lot of agencies now not even necessarily having business development or sales as the job title. Partnership seems to be the word, as it were. So they're the partnership growth manager or head of partnerships, which at first I didn't really know what they meant, but I suppose it does make sense with respect to agencies and clients looking for more of a relationship built on being partners. So it kind of makes sense. But yeah, I think, as I say, I think the difference between the two is probably quite marginal these days. And I think most people would use sales and business development interchangeably, if at all, using the word sales.
Sure. Yeah. No, I understand. Well, I mean, what feedback? I mean, you've been talking to agencies in the intervening time, obviously. Mm. But I mean, what feedback have you had from agency land with regards to the whole sort of new business picture? I mean, are there areas that have remained relatively unaffected, or I mean, do you think that there's a kind of a change all around?
I think when we spoke, it was back in March, wasn't it? I think at that time I'd spoken to an awful lot of agencies, whether they were clients, whether they're people I worked with in the past, whether they were just people I knew who wanted to, you know, to chew the fat. And I think at that point, most agencies had lost somewhere between 20 to 70% of their revenue almost overnight. So some agencies who were very exposed, perhaps because they were working within those sectors most affected, they had a pretty hard time of it early on. The picture since then, if I'm being perfectly honest now, I think it's relatively good, certainly by comparison on the new business front. I'm seeing an awful lot of agencies with a decent amount of opportunity on the table. I'm seeing a lot of agencies that are winning business right now.
Yes.
I think there was probably a point a few months ago when most of us realized that this wasn't something that was going to go away in 2 or 3 months. This was something that we were going to have to deal with for quite some time. I don't think you and I were necessarily expecting to still be sat in our homes, virtually locked in. And maybe that's even going to get worse in the coming weeks and months. But I think there was a point where people realized, do you know what, we've just got to crack on now. Right. And I think that would have been something that, you know, from the client's point of view as well, they would have also realized that we can't sit here and not just spend any money. We've got to adapt, we've got to evolve, we've got to pivot. That's been the word of the year, hasn't it? And we've got to find a way of carrying on. So I think although there was certainly a short-term hit and there wouldn't have been a great deal of new biz activity going on in kind of March, April, May time, I certainly think in the last couple of months it's really begun to accelerate again. It's not as it was seven or 8 months ago, of course it's not, but it's certainly getting better. And there's a lot of, you know, good news stories out there right now. We're not out of the woods, and there are still agencies having a bloody tough time of it. But overall, the picture seems to be certainly a lot more positive than it was a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a case of, I mean, you know, in the best economy, the world of new business or the agency new business is a challenge, you know, and obviously you throw in a pandemic and a lockdown plus a sort of a slow recession. And, you know, I mean, it becomes especially challenging. I mean, before the pandemic, why did agencies, or why do you think that agencies always seem to find new business just such a kind of a challenge for themselves?
Yeah. I think when we spoke last time, you know, I cited it as being within the top two challenges that agencies tend to face. And I think what interests me and having worked with a lot of agencies now is trying to kind of uncover the reasons why. You know, why is business development difficult? If we go back to the root causes, you know, and you look across a number of agencies, you will find that they're fairly consistent, to be quite honest.
Right.
I think a lot of it will come down to the perception or misconception or view of what business development actually is. And I think in a lot of agencies, they will tend to focus a lot of attention on service offering, on account management, on finances, on culture and people. And they'll invest a lot of time and effort in systems and processes all around that kind of stuff. It's quite rare, from my point of view, to go into an agency and see that they apply the same degree of attention to business development. It just doesn't get that level of attention.
We've got everything else in place now. Let's just get some sales. That's all we need.
Well, exactly. So I think there's an attention issue with respect to how it's treated compared to other parts of the agency. And there can be various different reasons for that, often born of the directors or owners and their view of what selling or business development looks like. There is a positioning issue, which I don't want to go into today, because if I start, Keith, we may not get me off that topic. So so positioning is often the root cause of everything within an agency. If we imagine that business development pyramid, as it were, rather like kind of Maslow's hierarchy, a business development equivalent would have positioning at its very base. Everything else becomes a little bit easier if the positioning piece is right. But for most agencies, it isn't. It's too broad brush. It's trying to be attractive to everyone. It's using the same old words and phrases as everybody else. So there is often a positioning issue. So that can be another problem. There is lead gen, an over-reliance on referrals. You know, if I speak to another agency owner that says to me, you know, we get all of our business from referrals, but I can't work out why we're not growing, my head may explode. There is no proactivity around new biz activity. It's just whatever happens to coming through the front door. And then there's the issue of what happens with respect to how leads are managed once they actually come through the front door. There's a big issue with respect to how we qualify, which I think is something that we're gonna touch on or certainly talk at length about today. So all of these issues kind of combine to ultimately make business development probably more difficult than ultimately it should be.
So, I mean, you in your capacity as a, you know, as a consultant, I mean, you address every one of those points on the way through the sort of the new business cycle, right?
Yeah, because ultimately they're interrelated.
Right. You
know, if you look at a problem with, say, qualifying, for example, the reason why an agency often can't say no is because they have no framework by which to qualify against. A framework being a really clear view of what the right client looks like for that agency. If you just say, well, we kind of work with anyone, big and small, across multiple sectors, then you have no reason or framework of which to say no. So you end up saying yes to everything and you work on loads and loads of pitches, loads of proposals, and your hit rate's going to be very low as a result of it. But you're wasting huge amounts of time working on proposals for stuff that ultimately you're not really going to win.
Right.
Whereas conversely, if you have a very clear idea of what the right client looks like and that's what you're qualifying against, you're going to say no more often. So there's a relationship between all of those things.
Well, I mean, we will dig into that. And I don't want to sort of, I want you to keep your powder dry because obviously this is a half hour long show. I don't want people shutting off after 5 minutes. so
they may have already done so, Keith, to be honest. But
well, that's the usual thing. But looking back on the first time that we did this on episode 3, it was remarkable, or you were remarkable for the fact that you were very, very cautious about how to react to the changing conditions. I don't want to throw your own words back at you, but you were very much a case of, well, I'm not rushing to do things. I'm just going to wait and see how this plays out. And, you know, but a lot of your kind of observations and a lot of the stuff that we were talking about there, and I'm not going to throw in clips just to prove how right we were, but a lot of the stuff we talked about has since come true. Now, I don't know whether that makes us just, you know, sort of good as new business people or, you know, just useful in terms of being consultants in that respect. But we discussed sectors and products that were going to thrive, and we were pretty much spot on. I mean, it was pretty good. So blowing trumpets aside, I mean, it's, you know, it's quite handy that, it's quite handy reference material. And I would suggest that anybody interested in finding out, you know, sort of what we were talking about, just go to episode 3 of the, you know, sort of on the playlist, and you can see, you know, you can see where we go. Cause I need people to keep listening to these shows. Cause I need the download numbers. The shit don't pay for itself, you know? so anyway, one of the things that you did major on was the use of free advice. And this was quite interesting from your perspective, because this was why you were holding back. And you know, you were very kind of you majored on the fact that the people were sort of very quick to give out free advice and coaching and stuff, and you said that you were going to keep your powder dry. But the reason that we wanted to do this again was because you've now spent that time putting something really valuable together for agency owners that's going to save them a whole load of time in the long run. Is that right?
I hope so. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been working on a course around qualifying, because I do see it as such a major failing, if I'm being quite honest, within agencies. We've talked about one reason why, and I think there's an issue around positioning, for example. So often there isn't that framework around what does the right client look like, and therefore what are we actually qualifying against. So that's one issue. I also think, for whatever reason, there is always a mad dash, and this is both from the agency's point of view, but it's also from a client's point of view as well. Everybody wants to get to the money shot, and the money shot is the proposal.
Yep.
We are addicted to proposals, to pitches. We're addicted to this kind of idea of the kind of Don Draper big reveal. So what we tend to do, and what tends to happen within an agency environment, is there is a conversation at the beginning, whether that's a face-to-face or more likely a conversation over Zoom or a telephone call. And then far too quickly, the agency then moves to writing a proposal after one phone call, mm-hmm. or maybe a couple of calls. But we are addicted to, or we move far too quickly to wanting to write a proposal before we've really invested the time to get to know the client and to really understand what they need. Because often I think what a client wants, or what they think they want, and what they actually need are often very different. So I think there's this idea of jumping too soon. And I think that's a problem.
Do you think that's partly because, and I'm analyzing my own actions. I mean, you know, I hold myself accountable for this, you know, from time to time, is that during the course of that, so let's say you have that conversation and you've picked up the buying signals, and, you know, the prospect or the client is saying, you know, yeah, okay, this is interesting, tell me more, you know, I want to find out more. Do you think that this is because we try and close it so that we don't lose it, and then we're making missteps in doing that, in that people are, you know, that you know, if it was me doing it, that I would be afraid of losing the sale by asking too many questions and then them drifting off and going off somewhere else, that we need to have it closed so that we can move on. Do you think that affects it? Or is this just me?
A degree? No, I think so. I think there can be a degree of impatience and wanting to move things too quickly towards a proposal. I think perhaps it's also down to the slightly misguided view that the proposal does the selling.
Right.
Well, I'll put everything down into writing, of which a lot of it, quite honestly, if you haven't spent enough time at the beginning of the process getting to know the client, asking those big meaty questions, really understanding what it is they need as opposed to what they want, then actually a lot of that proposal just becomes guesswork anyway.
Right.
And a lot more time is probably spent writing a very long-winded proposal or pitch deck, which is full of guesswork, rather than actually taking the time to establish what it is that the client needs at the beginning. And then hopefully by doing so, best case scenario is you don't have to write a proposal, or the proposal you'll write tends to be more of a summary because you've engaged with the prospect
just on a postcard type thing.
You've had more conversation with them. You've effectively qualified the proposal. So therefore you don't have to spend loads of time kind of second guessing what needs to go in there. So I think, you know, that's one of the key principles for me when it comes to how you qualify, is to slow things down, have more conversations, ask better questions, and incorporate more steps into the process. Not so that it becomes cumbersome, but so that you are getting to know the client better and asking those questions and building rapport, so that you stand a better chance of either winning it at the end or actually backing out sooner before you invest too much time. That's another angle as well, is we don't always have to go all the way through to the point of which we're writing a proposal. At any one of these steps, we can actually back out and say, do you know what? This isn't right for us.
Sure.
So let's say no. Imagine that. Let's say no.
Fantastic.
But that doesn't happen often enough.
No, and I think a lot of it is down to confidence, and you know, and I think that if you had all the time in the world, if you knew that you were the only supplier of such a thing, then it would be very easy for you to say, okay, well, let's just slow the whole process down. Let's just ask a few more questions. Let's make sure that we don't get it wrong, that, you know, that we tick all those boxes before, you know, we actually get into the actual job itself, because we want to make sure we get it right. And I think there is a great deal of impatience, but I mean, as you've just said, one of the sort of the best parts of the qualifying process is, and it can be very, you know, very enjoyable, is the questioning technique, you know, something that does take patience and empathy and skill to get right. And I think all of those factors come into play. So, and I just got to say at this point, I mean, the questioning technique is something that, you know, like everything, just takes time to get it right. You know, you have to practice at it, you know, and if they say that, you know, it takes what, 10,000 hours or whatever to fly a plane or play the guitar or play the guitar and fly a plane at the same time.
That'd be good.
You know, yeah, it'd be quite clever, actually. But, you know, I find it amazing that, you know, if you're over the age of 13, that you can still get this thing wrong, because really we should be asking questions in conversations all the time. You know, and we should be used to doing it. You know, the old two ears, one mouth thing, you know. Yeah. But so with that said, all right, what are the three most revealing questions to ask in the world of agency new business?
Oh, that's a great question. It's a difficult question to answer, simply because there are so many questions you can ask, but also it's where you ask those questions in the process. So if I was going to think about the early stages of the process, I think what you are looking to establish fairly early on is, let's say, for example, you get an email out of the blue from a prospect. It's probably no more than a couple of lines saying, you know, we're interested in having a chat about XYZ.
Right.
You've never heard of them before. You might do a little bit of due diligence initially. You might have a look at the website, do a little bit of background checking. You think, okay, well, in principle, this, you know, this looks like somebody that could fit our profile. But I think one of the first things you're looking to do at that stage is to try and establish whether you have any kind of advantage. So in other words, what you're looking to understand, you know, these are the three questions I would probably look to ask at this stage, is first of all, how did you find us?
Oh, yes.
Secondly, what encouraged you to get in touch with us specifically? And how many other agencies are involved and who? And I think what I'm looking to establish out of those three questions is, have they approached us because they've seen or heard something that would potentially give us an advantage over other agencies they may be speaking to? So they might say, we saw you speak at an event, or we downloaded a white paper, or you were referred to us by Joe Bloggs, or we really liked that piece of work you did with that particular brand. If somebody was to say something like that to me in my agency days, my ears would prick up and I'd go, okay, this is good. I've got a potential advantage. Even if they are speaking to other agencies, they've given me a really good reason why they've come to us.
Right.
If they draw blank and go, we were just doing some Google research for SEO agencies and we came across you guys, and then they also say there are another 18 agencies they're putting the RFP out to, I'm going to worry.
Yes.
And I'm probably going to find a good reason to, at that point, back out. So I think at that stage of the process, that sort of line of questioning is going to be really important. If they get past that stage, the nature of our questioning is going to start to change. So we may then move through to some kind of discovery meeting. And this is when you start to ask the big open-ended sort of discovery type questions, where you're really looking to try and understand things like objectives, business challenges, what they care about in terms of outcomes, that type of stuff.
Right.
But I think the questions at this stage that I tended to of course, I would ask those about challenges and objectives and so on. But I think one of the things that we often forget is that it is people that are buying us. It's not a company that is buying us. It's a person or a group of stakeholders. So the questions that I tended to want to really dig into fairly soon were about the individual, were about the people. So if I'd uncovered an issue, I'd want to understand how specifically this person is impacted by that particular problem. If we fix that problem, what would that allow you to do as my primary contact? What's most important to you? What would make your life easier? So it's kind of these types of questions that are not just focused on the business, but also focused on the, focused on
humanity.
The individual.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, because ultimately that's the person who is buying your stuff and is going to be impacted by whatever it is that you are proposing to do. But I don't think often we spend enough time really focused on the people.
That's, you know, it's amazing you said that. And I mean, it came up in a conversation recently on a sort of a podcast, in that it was a question of the knowing more about the business, the bigger picture of why you're doing what you're doing, knowing how the business operates and what its own pressure points are before you actually go wading in there with a whole bunch of solutions, because they may be solving problems that the company doesn't really see as a problem, because just what you've just said, you know, that is not a problem. What is a bigger problem is this problem, is this issue over here. So, I think
and also to build on your point, by understanding the bigger picture, as it were, whatever solution you are then putting up, you can then put it into context.
Yes.
And I think, again, this is the mistake agencies often make with their questioning. Let's say, for example, you get an SEO brief. What will tend to happen is that the agency will only ask questions about SEO. Well, what rankings do you want to get? You know, what keywords would you like to feature for? You know, it's about traffic and conversion. It's about the granularity of the service itself, rather than trying to elevate the conversation above that and actually understand what's happening in the business more broadly. And what that can also do is actually open up other opportunity, because if you're all of a sudden having conversations around the PR department or what else is happening in marketing, occasionally that might start to open up other opportunity as well. So we sometimes limit the conversation and we limit the opportunity if we're only really talking about the service that's under discussion. So
yes,
I think we've got to try and elevate the conversation, and we can only do that by asking bigger, broader, bolder, braver questions. For me, if you're looking at, you know, the very best skill, if you like, you can have a business development, is the ability to ask questions. It really is.
That's it's super important, you know, being able to ask the right questions and stuff. And I guess what you've just said kind of preempts my next question, which was about, you know, the typical mistakes that an agency can make in the qualifying process. You know, I mean, obviously, so we've just said one of the mistakes is obviously having quite a myopic vision on what problem it is you're trying to solve. You know, I mean, are there any other influences or any other areas that you think that agencies should be aware of?
Yeah, probably one or two that we've covered already. I think you know, being far too eager to get to that money shot or the proposal as it's otherwise known, rather than kind of stepping back, taking your time. In my agency days, Keith, I used to make a conscious effort not to write a proposal. And I know that sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but by almost entering into each opportunity with the objective of not writing a proposal, what it encouraged me to do was to kind of slow right down, to ask more questions and seek to really qualify whatever the proposal was going to be verbally with the prospect before we even considered putting pen to paper. And I think this is a real key rule, if you like, that I try to follow and try to encourage my clients to follow, in that anything you put down on paper should have already been verbally agreed with the prospect prior to that point. You shouldn't be going away and second guessing and using a proposal to qualify. So no. By almost approaching the whole process by saying, actually, my aim here is not to write a proposal, it encourages you to slow right down, ask the right questions, and qualify what you may have to put down on paper, but to have more conversation with the prospect rather than just go away and second guess and end up spending huge amounts of time writing, which, you know, quite frankly, who wants to do that?
Well, it's almost like the anecdote that I heard about that it's similar to having a marriage contract. It's like you don't get married and then find out what being married is all about, you know.
Exactly.
So suddenly you get a set of rules. You should know the rules before you go in there.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I use the, you know, the dating analogy often around this kind of stuff. And, you know, you wouldn't go on one date and then propose.
No.
But this is what happens in agency land. We have one conversation at the beginning and then we write a proposal. And the chances of that proposal being right are fairly minimal, even at the best of times. Even when you go through this process, you know as well as I do that often the brief changes once they actually become a client. But that's much more likely to happen if you don't actually take more time and introduce a few more steps during the course of the process. But I think the big one and the big mistake to avoid is this eagerness to get to the proposal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we and allied to that, we had a guest on recently, Hank Blank, and he was he was talking about the martini approach, which is something I hadn't heard for years. But you know, the martini approach about being anytime, any place, anywhere, where a salesperson tries to be, you know, kind of all things at all times, and you know. Often that has the kind of opposite effect that's desired by, you know, and then you end up landing a piece of business that ends up screwing the agency process and, you know, and it can cause untold damage within the agency. So,
absolutely.
So why should agencies have a process and what does good look like?
I think there's a number of reasons why a process should be in place. And I've always been a big fan of process. It's just the way my brain works. It's not to say that by having a process, we never step outside of it. But by having a process, it ensures greater consistency with respect to how we approach each opportunity. Okay. But I think there's another thing to consider here. If you're dealing with quite sophisticated buyers, they're going to have a process. Now, if we don't have a process that we can kind of use to counter theirs, if we don't have our own policies, if you like, then we have nothing by which we can go back and say, well, actually, we understand why you have that step in there, but we also have a policy of having this step in here, and this is the reason why. If you don't have a process, then you don't have anything you can kind of fall back on and almost use that argument, if you like. For a less sophisticated buyer, they probably don't have a process. So they need to be guided. They need to have that little bit of hand-holding. They need to be educated on why these steps are important. And also by having a process that includes a number of steps within it, we have more opportunities, as we said earlier, to A, build rapport and ask those questions. Because what isn't going to happen, you're not going to be able to cover off every single thing that you want to cover off in one phone call at the beginning. You're going to have potentially dozens, sometimes hundreds of questions you're going to want to ask at different stages of the process. You can't ask those all in one job lot and then move on to writing a proposal. So having more steps in there allows for you to have those different questions, as we used the example earlier on, at different stages of the process. And because of that, it also allows you to back out. If you get to stage three of the process and you go, do you know what? We've had two conversations. I've then sat down with the team and briefed them. And they've said, Ben, what the hell are you doing? This is not something that's going to fly. This is not something we can work on. Their objectives are pie in the sky. We could never do that. That additional step says, okay, well, I have at this point a reason to go back to the client and say, no, I've had a conversation with the team. We don't think we can make this work. We're going to now decline the opportunity, which you can't do that if you're jumping from one phone call straight into writing a proposal.
And that right there sums up the difference between business development and sales. It's true. And that, you know, a business development should never be afraid to walk away from something because it's not right for the business.
Yes.
Rather than sales being right for, you know, the salesperson.
The individual. Yes. Yeah. That's very true. Yes, that's very true. And I think that's a good point, you know, Keith, that you kind of lead into, that a good business developer will take responsibility for what they're throwing over the fence. So, you know, and I think whatever they are winning, as it were, it should be a collaborative effort with the team involved anyway. It shouldn't just be, oh, I've won this thing. is it okay if you start now delivering on it next week? And the team go, Jesus Christ, where did that come from? So it should be collaborative anyway. But in any case, that business developer has a responsibility for what they are bringing into the agency.
Absolutely.
And that's why a process is so important, because it allows them to work through and ultimately win the right work.
And that does require, I mean, the business development role therefore requires a degree of business acumen, you know, so oversight over the wider processes of the company, rather than just, you know, just what the sales do and how much money that generates. It's what the company does with the money and where it's trying to get to, sort of in the process.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously, so that would account for basically, you know, the skills that are needed, you know, in the qualifying process. I mean, are there any other parts that you would say are integral to the qualifying process?
In terms of skills, specifically of a business developer, I think a certain amount of bravery, actually, and this goes back to, I suppose there are two angles to that. Bravery to say no. On behalf of the agency, to be able to justify to your director the reason why you've said no, because something doesn't fit with the agency, or you don't get a good feel about the people, or the guy, quite frankly, is just a bit of a dick. So there's bravery around that. I think there's also bravery in the questions that you ask. I think you do have to be a little bit ballsy. You do have to be prepared to ask those questions that sometimes can be a little bit daunting. You have to have a natural curiosity. You have to care about the business and the people that you're talking to. We've talked about questions. I really believe the biggest advantage you can have in that qualifying process is the ability to ask good questions. So I think that is absolutely integral. You've got to be able to then listen to the answers, of course, haven't you? There's no good asking a great question and then
wandering
moving on
off
to the next one. So somebody said to me, the best question you can ask is the next question. So by asking one question, you're then listening to the answer, and then that should probably naturally lead into another question, which is, if you think about how you converse with somebody at the pub, you ask them a question, they give you a bit of information, and then your curiosity drives you to ask another question that is related to that aspect of the conversation, which I think is important to say. We can't script this kind of stuff, so it takes a bit of practice, but asking good questions and listening, I think, is key. And then empathy. You know, there's been a lot of talk about empathy this year and how we need
to be more empathetic. That's another word for the year. Yeah.
It is. But I kind of had the view when that was being spouted about at the turn of the year that isn't that just good business development anyway? Aren't we supposed to be empathetic to the people that we're talking to by listening and trying to put ourselves in their in their shoes? And then I think probably the final one with patience. You know, you can't move too quickly from conversation A to proposal. You've got to be prepared to take the time. And sometimes this whole process can take a number of weeks.
Yeah.
I think the average lead time does tend to be about 12 weeks. It's, you know, it can be about 3 months. If you're trying to move people too quickly through the process, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So I think you've got to be patient with this as well.
Yes. That's a very good point. And I think that the world of business development is kind of has taken a long time to come round to that kind of idea that you're looking at a gestation period, you know, of 6 to 9 months before you know any real progress is made. So I mean, okay, so on to the purpose of your visit here. Okay, how can agencies learn a bit more about how to be more effective in the qualification process?
Is this shameless plug time? Is it
absolutely, go for it.
I'll do you a
jingle if you want.
Oh, fantastic! I've never had my own jingle before. go and read a few of my articles. I've made a conscious effort this year, for obvious reasons, to put a lot more content out there, to open up the Pandora's box a little bit with regards to some of the things that I would normally have clients pay me a few quid to provide. So there are some articles out there.
Right.
I will be very honest with you. A lot of my inspiration comes from the likes of David C. Baker, the likes of Blair Enns. I finally got round to reading Win Without Pitching in the last few months, and thankfully a lot of the principles that I'd had circling around in my brain were reinforced by Blair Enns, but actually they were accelerated by his view on what good qualification looked like. So there's some great reading out there by people far more well versed and experienced in this stuff than I. But I am in the process of also trialing with six unsuspecting agency owners and business developers next week a course around qualifying. Eventually that will be hopefully an on-demand course, but we're a few weeks or maybe a few months away from that. We're all learning this stuff, aren't we, how to do it.
Yeah.
But there is a course on the way around qualifying. Or just give me a shout if you just want to have a chat and you just want to pick my brains and you're an agency owner struggling with the whole idea of what qualifying is and how to do it well and some of the principles around it. My book is I'm very much open at the moment with respect to just speaking to people and helping them out where I can.
Well, and clearly, I mean, as you know, as evidenced in from episode 3, I mean, a lot of what you say is, you know, is good, you know, it's good value. So it's always worth people sort of checking you out. And but from a career aspect, if someone was getting into a career of business development, and I would guess that the market is opening up slightly now with people not being quite so channeled down through further education, that things are going to become a little bit looser, and you know, entrepreneurs are going to start, there's going to be more businesses, and a lot of those entrepreneurs are going to need to have a little, you know, a basic knowledge of business development and sales and stuff. And if someone came to you and kind of wanted to follow in your footsteps, I mean, what?
They don't want to do that, Keith.
Well, this is like a derivative of that hoary old question about, you know, what would you say to 12-year-old or to 20-year-old yourself?
Yeah.
But I mean, so if somebody came to you and said, look, you know, I want to do what you do, you know, I mean, what advice would you give them for today's market?
I think if they were going to go into business development in an agency environment, I think first and foremost, find the right agency. And what I mean by that is an agency that is pretty well positioned, that have a really clear idea of kind of what the right client looks like for them and where their expertise is best applied.
Right.
Where they already have some systems and processes where, for goodness sake, they've already got a CRM, they've already got some data in play. The reason why I say this is that because the biggest mistake I often see by agency owners when they're bringing business development talent into the agency is that they almost see it as a bit of a silver bullet. And actually what they don't have in place already is any of the stuff that I just described a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
So who's ever then coming into the agency is not only tasked with selling a dead horse in reality, because the positioning and so on dictates that the agency don't really know who they're trying to talk to, but they don't have any of this stuff in play. So the business development manager is already tasked with trying to sell, but has also got to effectively create a new biz function out of nothing. So I think if you're going to go into business development and you are fairly green, I think it's going into an agency where there are some established things already there, where there are some people you can learn from, where there's going to be some good mentorship, rather than going into maybe a very, very small agency as kind of an exec where there's nobody else around you. And effectively you've got to almost kind of learn on the job. So I think that would be key for me. Mm. I think another thing is to do something which I, in hindsight in my career, certainly early on, didn't do nearly enough of. My reading and my research within my agency tended to be about the services we were offering, or tended to be about the sectors we were targeting. I, in hindsight, didn't spend nearly enough time really reading about business development and actually buying books on. I know that sounds bizarre to say, but when you're in the job and you're just doing it and you're learning on the job, which is of course one way of doing it, but you also need to kind of supplement that with reading books by people that really know what they're talking about, that have been there and have done it. And I didn't do enough of that during my agency days, and I wish I'd done more.
Right.
I'm catching up now and doing more reading, but really, really dedicate yourself to the topic of business development and read a lot. So that would be another. Be prepared to get your sleeves rolled up and get stuck in. You're going to do a bit of everything, and you're going to work out what you like and kind of what you don't like. You're going to have to do some of the hard graft, the grunt work, as I call it. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do some prospecting. You might have to send some emails and mess around on LinkedIn. You might even have to pick up the telephone, dare I say. But, throw yourself into all of that.
I had to wear a costume.
What?
I had to wear a silly costume once as well.
I know.
It was a fish. I had to wear a fish costume once as part of my role.
In an agency role, or
this was when I was in house. I was in house, okay. And I worked for a computer games developer, big plug called Millennium, and okay. they had it was the old days of the Sega console, and they had a character called James Pond, and he was a fish. And they had a suit, and it was I think it was my third or fourth day, and I was the sales and marketing person there, my fourth day there, and they said, oh, we've got a photo shoot coming, we need someone to get in the suit. And I was forced to dress up like a freaking fish and stand next to a Porsche and be photographed.
You haven't got a photo of that, have you?
You're right. I mean, I make light of it, but there is a degree of adaptability, and I think people have to and the one thing that funnily enough did actually teach me was to be able to dress like a fish and stand next to a car, but to be able to understand what it was that excited games players, that they were just really into, the whole hammy cheesiness of the whole thing, and I got to meet some great games players as a result of it. So, and it was good fun, it was all good fun. And I did get on to do other more grown up stuff, but it's true. You do have to sort of dig in and sort of try and help the company on the wider
absolutely.
Bit. And I think
absolutely.
getting back to what you said about, mentorship and stuff like that. I had a conversation this week talking about the fact that people aren't going to be in offices and that they'll miss the idea of having somebody working next to them who knew more than they did and passing advice on and stuff. But I think the Gen Z or Gen Z, whatever you want to call them, sort of generation, have got so much information at their fingertips now that they don't necessarily need to sit next to some guy that's been doing the job for 30 years, that actually they can, they can start doing their own research and find out and come across people like you who've got, kind of sage words of advice to hand out. I think that, that is the beauty of what we do now. It's all committed on the internet.
Absolutely. When I started out, going to say 20 odd years ago, the internet was only just really kicking off, I suppose, really. I barely remember having a Hotmail email account at university, let alone how to use browsers and how to find stuff. And, you relied on textbooks, and I'm a massive advocate of reading, absolutely, but you're absolutely right. You can find so much great advice, whether that's articles or blog posts or so on, just by going online. You don't necessarily need to go and read a book in full. I'd still recommend you do so, but the volume of information out there now is incredible. So a little bit of self-learning, absolutely.
You have to get a book. You have to do a book.
Oh, do you know what? Go on, come up with a title for me, Keith. That'd be a good challenge. We could spend some time brainstorming a title between us. Because the more I read, of course the more I learn, but the more I realise that there are some very clever people out there that have come up with some great ideas and great theories. I've come up with a few, but like all of us, I've borrowed quite a lot as well.
Yeah, but I mean, not only do you have the Potter name, which obviously sells good in books, you could release the Ben Potter series, you know. But
there you go, there's an idea.
Or just get some round glasses. Just get some round glasses. You'll be fine. But okay, no, excellent. You've got so much great advice and stuff. I think a decent book. I think that in the days of self-publishing that we're in now, I think that'd be dead handy. I'd certainly buy it.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, there you go. There's one copy already.
There's one
already,
it depends,
sold.
Obviously. I mean, you know, let me just qualify that, if I may.
Well, that
depends on the price.
Well, to you, I think you'd probably get a free copy. You've had me on twice now, so I think I could probably return you a free copy.
Well, I appreciate that. So, okay. So, talking slightly sort of lighter issues. I mean, you know, you've got to learn to sort of get. Learn different new ways to get up in the morning and, you know, and to face the day. I mean, what motivates you? How do you get motivated every day?
Well, what wakes me up in the morning, two kids and a dog normally is enough to get me out of bed at a fairly decent hour. I think it's really simple. That's really simple for me, Keith. You know, I know a little bit about this business development lark, and a lot of people are fearful of it. A lot of people don't understand it. A lot of people associate business development with a more traditional view of sales and selling, and you know that vision of a kind of a 1980s door to door salesman, and therefore they're turned off by it.
Right.
I think the thing that motivates me more than anything is if I can just change people's perception just a little bit. If I can just help make business development a tiny bit easier for a few people at a time, I'm happy. That's all I really set out to do. I don't do it for the money necessarily. It pays the bills. It keeps a roof over my head. The kids are able to have a hot meal a couple of times a day. But it's really just about trying to help people, Keith, if I'm being honest. Because it is something which is so often misunderstood. There are so many misconceptions around business development. So just trying to make it a bit easier for people, that will do me.
Well, that's a very very noble cause, and I mean anybody liking obviously what they hear from you. I mean, how best to get hold of you?
Probably LinkedIn, Keith. I think you may have asked me that same question 6 months ago, and I probably said, "Yeah, there'll be a website coming soon.
Oh yeah, like the book then.
Like the book, yeah. A lot of these things are still coming soon. The website is actually being worked on, and the interesting thing is, and I say it's been an accidental experiment, but I have learned in the last 3 or 4 years, you don't need a website to win business.
LinkedIn
is a very, very, very powerful tool. I shouldn't be overly reliant, of course, on a third-party social network of which I have zero control, but it has served me well. So LinkedIn is probably the best place to start. And I will say it again, so that if we speak again in 6 months' time, you can rib me when I say it's still coming. But there is a website around the corner.
Well, on that website, I expect a page that says "Book me for an appearance on the show." I've noticed that on people's websites now, on their personal websites, they've got a little, you know, I do guest speak. Everybody's a guest speaker now, you know.
Of course,
it's like,
yeah.
Book me now, you know.
Yeah. I bet. Well, there are, you know, and it's been a great.
It's a bit lofty, though, isn't it? It's a little bit lofty.
It's a little bit lofty. But you think there are so many podcasts out there now that somebody's bound to say yes. I mean, you said yes to me twice.
But you see, I've got a cunning strategy in place.
There's
a reason. But no, it's I think it's always enjoyable talking to you. And
thank you, Keith.
You know, it's I think you've you've managed to pass on some great information for people, and obviously, so if people need to get hold of you, they can do the kind of LinkedIn thing or email you somehow.
Yeah, they can email me, ben@ben-potter.co.uk. If you want to get in touch, feel free. Drop me an email.
And what's anybody going to get out of talking to you? What's going to be the first thing they'll get?
What's going to be the first thing they get? Probably on the basis of our conversation today, a lot of questions.
Okay.
They're going to be asked a lot of questions to begin with. I like to get to know the agency. I like to get to know the people. I like to get to understand where they're at, where they're trying to get to. So I wouldn't be doing my job properly if I didn't practice what I preach and want to find out more about them first and foremost. So
perfect.
That's one of the golden rules of selling. We shouldn't just start talking about ourselves. We should ask questions so that when we do start talking about ourselves, it's relevant. So yeah, expect a few questions first and foremost.
Perfect. Well, look, I mean, last time you were on, we had the luxury of being able to ask you, you know, your favorite, your Desert Island disc and your book
and everything
else like that, which the disc, by the way, has actually made the mixtape for the year, which we'll be releasing.
Good.
We're releasing in time for Christmas.
Fantastic.
And we've had the wonderful Bill Walsgrove has actually mixed 1.5 hours of music from all our guests.
Fantastic.
I believe it was yourself that picked the was it the boss that you picked?
It was the boss.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Well, he made the cut. You know.
Excellent.
He made
good the to cut. Hear. So, I would be horrified if he hadn't have done. To be quite honest, Keith.
Well, the worst thing is
without the boss,
you'd obviously know because I'd be asking you for another one. But so anyway, now those questions are out, so I can't ask you those. But I've come up with a new one now.
Okay.
New one for you, which is so. Lockdown's finished. You can go back out. Where's the first place you're going to take a client for lunch? And what would you have?
Oh, good question. Probably my favourite cuisine is Thai. I love a good Thai meal. So it'd be a really good, authentic, a little bit rustic, a little bit rough around the edges, decent Thai place with decent beer on tap would make me and hopefully a client very happy. So yeah, that's probably where I'd head first.
Perfect. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, as usual, always great. And thank you so much. I'm sure people will find this useful. And we'll have you on again soon. And thank you very much for all your help and advice. And
not at all.
You know, I look forward to catching up with you soon. But in the meantime, take care and look after yourself and look after everyone around you.
Will do. Thanks
Speak
very
to
much.
Ta-da.
And you. Take care.
Bye. So now you know. Ben's really good at making the new business process look easy, but let me tell you, it's not. So drop Ben a line if you've got questions about anything new business related, or check him out on LinkedIn. Otherwise, if you're planning on doing it yourself, now you've got some great tips and methods on how to make sure your sales pipeline is full of good intentions. Thanks to all of you for the positive feedback we've been getting. If you want to write to us, drop us a line via the website at www.thefuelpodcast.com. We read every email and we promise to get back to you. My thanks also to co-producer Donna, our in-house band, The Prospectors, that's St. Matthew, Barney and Memory Banks, all IT functionality provided by the team at Quijibo Design in downtown Indianapolis. So join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be interviewing Hank Blank for another look at what's going on in the USA. And we'll be serving up another nourishing gourmet course of sales wisdom, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?